And I've learned over the years this white-centric model of therapy. It's cute, but it's not everything. There's so much more we can do, provide in ways that we don't think we can because, that's not how it's done. Or that we don't do that in counseling. It's like, actually, we do and we can. And how are you to know? You've never served my community, the community I serve.
Welcome to Deconstructing Therapy, transforming therapy and the therapists who lead it. Let's deep dive into conversations, reshaping therapy into a powerful tool for healing, liberation, and systemic change. Join us as we challenge the status quo, reimagine care, and celebrate therapists breaking barriers. Let's transform therapy together.
Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Joey Tapia. Dr. Joey is a licensed mental health counselor at Vandala Counseling Collaborative based in Denver, Colorado. Dr. Joey's approach is deeply rooted in the belief that human connection is essential for our survival. As an attachment-based therapist with advanced training in emotionally focused individual, couple, and family therapy, he integrates trauma-informed, disability-affirmative, and LGBTQ+ affirmative frameworks to support diverse individual identities. Committed to being accessible, responsive, and emotionally engaged, Dr. Joey collaborates with his clients to set meaningful goals and create a therapeutic space that fosters development and deep understanding. I'm so excited to kind of hear your journey and your story. So is it okay if we kind of jump right in? Like, what brought you into the field of therapy? Yeah. Is this your first profession?
I guess, yes. It's interesting. I never thought I had a plan until much later, but it all kind of, I always felt like my journey was in so many different places. And yet when I look it back, it's all been like one streamlined experience, which is nice. But where it all started was an American Sign Language class. I took an ASL1 class and that opened my world to just sign language and the deaf community. My professor was deaf and I was just so interested in learning. And that led to me taking the second class. And then I wanted the third and fourth and I had to change majors. And I wanted to help people. Yeah, I knew that part. And so it was psychology, but the professors that I had, the content wasn't interesting. They definitely weren't helping that matter. And I was just so turned off, I would say. I was getting C's and then I took this class and my world expanded. And when I went to change my major, it was to rehabilitative services with a concentration in deafness. And I knew at that point, I was like, oh, yes, I'm in the right spot. I loved every class that I took. I just was absorbed into learning how to support the deaf and hard of hearing community. And that propelled me to want to do rehabilitation counseling for my master's. And so I did that in North Texas. And I'm so glad I did. I knew I wanted to work with the deaf. Like, that's all I wanted to do. And so I ended up working 10 years ago, over 10 years ago, actually. This point, I ended up working as a vocational rehabilitation counselor where I had a full deaf and hard of hearing caseload, and it was incredible. I loved it. And this, working for the state, for anyone out there who, you know how hard it is, it was hard 10 over it was 12 years ago, so I can only imagine how hard it is now.
Wait, let me slow down for a second, because this is like, it feels like a big shift to me. Like, the way you're talking about it felt like it's just organically, like, I knew that was the place for me to go. But what do you think got fed for you when you shifted to working with the deaf community and learning sign language that felt missing when you were in learning psychology?
I knew I was going to school. I'm a first gen grad. And so I knew it was important. I had to do it, kind of thing. And I felt lost in that. I didn't feel excited. My GPA was literally a 2.0. I wasn't enjoying what I was doing. I never felt capable. And I think when I took ASL, I was able to piece this together much later. And when I was in my doc program, I think one of the reasons why I enjoyed exploring, engaging in American Sign Language and just the whole idea of expression and expression being communication was I didn't have to hide who I was. like as a gay man. Like I didn't have to suppress anything. It was needed. All of me was needed for communication to occur. Does that make sense?
Yes. Oh, that's so beautiful. And it seems like you just knew it intuitively at the time and you listened to that intuition, which is awesome.
At 20, I had no idea, right? But much later, I was like, I really had to sit with, because I had to do a presentation on myself. And so I had to really reflect on it, and it came together, and I was just struck and felt so, I'm so happy that this happened, because I wouldn't be where I'm at currently had I not taken that one class.
That sounds so liberating. And on the converse, so then when you were in the psychology world, do you feel like you had to be somewhat muted with your sexuality? Was there some kind of unconscious kind of biases there?
Definitely internalized homophobia. It was an undergrad degree or undergraduate courses in psychology. And so, you know, they're just as they were then, you know, they're full of, you know, 50 to 80 students. There's not really space to just be and really feel seen and heard. Whereas in the rehab program that I was in, it was a much more manageable classes. Like there were like 20 to 30 of us. I felt like I was with these people. We all knew why we were here, you know, supporting the disabled community. And there was different sections of us, right? There were the deaf concentration folks, and there were the addiction concentration folks, and then they're like the general.
I just want to even unpack that for a moment, because I'm hearing so many pieces there. So it's, yeah, I know I want to help people. You go into the psychology world and it's like more massive and maybe more sterilized and these unconscious biases there. And then when you went to the sign language class, it's the intimacy, you got that humanness back and it felt like more of a focus on the people that you're actually helping. That feels bigger there.
Yes.
And then the language is expression. That feels very big too, because you have to bring your whole self and be expressive when you're doing it. Versus in psychology, there's so many different levels, but you can kind of be muted. And sometimes you're even expected to be.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
It's been a beautiful journey. And when I worked for the state, it was a blend of counseling but mainly was case management. And so I knew I wanted to do more. So I branched off to working as a counselor at a post-acute brain injury rehab facility. And I loved that job. It was an integrated care setting. I was working with PT, OT, speech, therapy. We had education therapists who essentially functioned as teachers, case managers. We had nurses. We had a physician who managed all the patients.
You were a counselor. You were doing counseling. Okay.
So I did step away. I worked for the state for 2 years. And so when I transitioned to this job, I did give up that day-to-day working with the deaf and hard of hearing. That was very sad to leave. Some of that, I would say, I rarely did have a deaf patient who had a brain injury, but I would say in my time there, I may have had like one or two, but I was just blown away with the work that I could do at that place. I loved working there so much. I loved the flexibility that we had to just support the patients there. It was lovely. And then I joined a group practice as an independent contractor and worked there for 4 years. And while I was working at this rehab facility, I was doing that part-time outside. Because I had never worked for a counseling agency before. And so I was like, you know, I just want to do therapy direct. I was doing that already at the rehab setting, but it was very specific to brain injury. I was like, you know, I want to do this outside. And wow, was my mind blown as to, one, my lack of training, two, lack of confidence, and three, just a sense of direction.
You were thrown into a whole other world with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for the first time, I would say in my professional career, I felt, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. Being a rehab counselor, it's a very specific job. And then working as a counselor at the post-acute setting, it was very specific as well. And it very much mirrored a lot of the work that I did, because I could still help folks with community resources. I could still do on-site job stuff for them. I could still do a lot of those things. But stepping out of that rehab world altogether.
You had to create your own direction. Huh? There's just, it wasn't given to you. Yeah.
And I wasn't confident. Like I didn't feel good about what I was doing. At that point, I was looking, and I'm so glad this happened. I was considering going back to school, which again, for me, someone who at the early, before I had changed my major in undergrad, had a 2.0, didn't know where I was going, didn't feel good, to feeling like I need to go back. It was, you know, wild to me, but I knew I wanted to. And I'm so grateful that I did, because I went back because I wanted to be a better counselor. I wanted to have more skills. I wanted to have more confidence. Little did I know that it was going to open a door to so much more. And I'm so grateful that happened.
Was that scary for you after what experience you had before? Was that a hard decision to go back?
Yes, it was. And I felt, you know, there, because our, you know, master's degrees in counseling are terminal. And so going back with 10 people who all have counseling degrees. There was two of us who had been in the field for a little bit before coming back. The rest had just went straight through. But still, there's this sense of, do I know things? They seem to know a lot of things that I don't know. And I was the only rehab counselor. And so it would that...
How did you overcome all of that? Like
curiosity. That is how I got through it. I was just so curious and genuinely, because I'd already found what I wanted to do, right? Like I had got there, had been doing it. I really wanted to learn. That is how I was able to overcome it. I just really wanted to learn. And I'm grateful for the faculty that I had, because many of them fostered that curiosity to learn, made space for that curiosity, didn't shut me down, didn't shame me, didn't, like, there was none of that. It was like, let's figure out what you have and let's go from there.
And I'm so happy that you got that second experience that was so different from your first. Did you feel like you got to be you? You got to be expressive? Did you feel like you didn't? Yeah.
Not only that, I got to work through internalized racism, internalized homophobia. Honestly, like I knew it was there, but I didn't really have words to express or explain it. And then in that space, I had the opportunity to actually work on it. My community that I'm from, it's like 98% brown people. Even in undergrad, I went further South Texas, so it was more of the same. It felt exactly the same as home. And it wasn't until I moved to North Texas where I was confronted with, oh, we're not the majority anymore. This is different. This is not what I thought, you know. And there I was confronted with a lot of messages around, you know, what part of Mexico are you from? Or, you know, you have an accent. And and hearing those, I just always felt compelled to fit in. So my goal was to fit in as much as possible. That, I would say, impacted me in a negative way, obviously. The spaces I put myself in, the groups of people that I would hang out with, like, it was all for the sake of being in connection, but the connection wasn't genuine. And they weren't real friends.
It was your mask that was connecting with them.
Absolutely. And it wasn't until, you know, I had to confront these experiences that I was able to piece together how often I strived to be white, how often my goal was to become white, right? And like, obviously, as a brown man, that's not happening. But even with like my name, like I didn't like my legal name. I had so much, not shame, but like I didn't want that to put any barriers.
That's such an important topic. This is something that I'm still contending with in my own decolonization journey. And it's something often people don't, when we talk about racism, it's often like a black and white conversation. But the brown experience, and especially brown people, and I think me and you probably have a lot more proximity to whiteness, have more white adjacency. And so it comes with this other complication, because we can kind of get some proximity to whiteness and alleviate our own effects of racism, right? Oh, I'm not like the other ones, don't worry. Mm-hmm. And we gain some success in that, right? Like we're light-skinned enough. You can change your name, you can do that, but you lose yourself in it.
Absolutely. Yeah. That sits with me. And all for the sake of connection. That was what drove me. That's all I wanted. But I would say there's some important people that I was on this journey with that always held true to their identity. They showed me that I didn't have to lose it to have connection, that I didn't have to minimize it to be myself. And I've never told them this. I should.
Can you speak about that moment that you saw that modeled for you?
Yeah, one of them, Monica Rodriguez Delgado. She always knew who she was. She came into the program. She was passionate about serving the Spanish-speaking community. She just was always trying to ensure that that community was uplifted, that she was uplifting in our spaces that were so discriminatory, so minoritized and limited in resource. She always found ways to just really center them and then speak from her journey and her experience. And then the other person is Ana Guadalupe Reyes. I just remember a moment where I was self-conscious about my speaking Spanish around them. They had more fluency than I did. I remember making a comment early on before I really deconstructed all of the internal stuff, where I said, I just speak English with me.
Look at that dilemma we're faced with, though, just as these, second generation children. It's like, I'm not cultural enough for this group. And then I'm not white enough for this other group. And you're always stuck in this limbo. But I see the emotion in your face as you're talking about Monica and Anna, just that deep appreciation. What is that, acceptance that you felt from them? What did you feel?
I mean, definitely acceptance. But I think they just said, I feel emotional right now. This is so weird. Weird in the sense that the way it's all pieced together right now, it's just interesting. I thought I had to sacrifice myself, like who I was, to fit into this field, to be just fit in. And to be around both of them, so just culturally embodied as themselves without giving a shit about anything. It was empowering. I think that's the word. Empowering to experience, to witness.
I'm so grateful you got that modeled for you.
Yeah.
Because when we don't get that model for us, then we're just, okay, well, the only way to connect is to fully code shift and put on that white skin, and just you could be your full cultural self and still have connection.
Yes, absolutely. And it was different. I was the only one in my entire family who had left our Latina community. And so I was hours away, and then I went further away, being in Colorado. So I was...
And you're the first one who went to school too, is that right?
In my family, in my immediate family, yes. So yeah, there was all these new things and figuring out who I was and what that looked like. So they were crucial. They played important roles to build a path for me to be able to continue to explore to where... When I came to Colorado, I moved here during the pandemic. So making friends was not going to happen in the same way. But when I was intentional with, I don't want the same type of friend groups that I once had, driven by this internalized racism, driven by this internalized homophobia. I had worked through that and I wanted to have actual communities that were queer and were brown and were cultured in ways that just made me feel very connected to me. And I joined kickball. It was a gay kickball league, and I found a group that were incredible and coming from so many different backgrounds, like Cuban, Nicaraguan, Puerto Rican, Venezuelan, and all of us coming together, the intersections of being gay and also brown and also Spanish speaking, but from different cultures within that. It was what I was seeking.
Can you tell me a little bit about your experience growing up? Did you have models of people who were Hispanic and gay?
Not many. I'm the only one in my entire family on both sides that at least is out that I know. And so it was just me, little gay me. I dealt with bullying a lot for being gay even before I would say I knew what that word meant. Seems like others were able to pick up on it. And so there was always something that they could see that I couldn't see right away. Like I knew that of myself, but I'm like, what are they seeing that gives them this signal, right? I didn't really come out until my late teens into my early 20s. Again, things you don't know. But when I did, it was met with a lot of love from my parents and my dad even saying, I wish you would have just told me sooner. I'm like, after this response, me too.
Yeah, that must have felt so good. Oh, wow.
Definitely very relieving. I was dating someone at the time. Okay, that's how we broached it. I said, this is them. This is us, And my entire family, too. I didn't experience any form of otherness. It's never been a thing with my family. I am treated just like any other family member, which is lovely. Same with my friends. I know this is not the situation for many people. Similar to my friend group, I still have them. We've been friends for over 15 years. All it is love. And so I'm grateful for that. I mean, that definitely allowed me to propel myself into figuring out who am I as a gay person. But moving to North Texas, I think having experiences with certain groups of quote-unquote friends and just this internalized message that I couldn't be my full self. Once I was able to do something with that, move through it, coming here to Colorado was much more intentional. And I'm just so grateful for the community I found. Moving to Denver, knowing what I was seeking and being able to find that. It was a community I've been needing and wanting for so long. Being so far away from home, they feel like family. And it's been beautiful.
What was it about Denver? What was that intention around that?
I was in Colorado Springs, and for those out there who know where that is, heavy military. There's so many different bases, from Space Force to Air Force to Army. There's a lot of transplants, but temporary transplants. They are just anti everything.
Okay, got it. Yeah.
And the felt sense that we belong there wasn't quite there. Whereas in Denver, there's like, I live down the street from a mercado, from lots of Mexican restaurants. Like, it feels like there's enough of us here, if that makes sense. I feel good.
Yeah, it's so important to have that around us. You just feel that energy when there's more alignment. And I like that you were intentional about it, because it's easier to lose yourself when you don't have a community around you. So can we talk a little bit about how you took this change in you of like, I need to be my full cultural self. Like, I don't want to lose that again. And even that journey is beautiful, right? Like, it was just, I need to connect. Like, I'll shove parts of me down in order to do that. And then, wait, I can do both. I need to hold on to me. Like, no matter what, I will move to another spot that allows me to hold on to me. How did you take that into practice? How did that shift you? How do you even utilize that now?
I think once I was able to figure out how I lost myself, I was then able to be intentional with, okay, I need to stop resisting what I've been wanting, right? This sense of genuine connection. I had to figure out what that actually meant, right? I had to figure out, oh, it's not just, you know, a group of gay friends. No, it's more than that. Or a group of gay white friends, right? It's more than, it's similar, right? In attachment, it's like the connection is there, the desire for it. It couldn't be from the same place of insecurity, of feeling like who I was not enough. It had to be who I am is enough, and who is around me, that should be mirrored and or amplified, right? And or experienced collectively. That was part of, I would say, the drive to make the decisions to move, be more intentional.
So it's when you have that internal space of home and who I am is enough, you are able to really feel that in a different way. Other people need to see that and mirror that back to me, and that's my spaces. And if I don't see that, then that's okay. Keep moving.
And I would say professionally too, finding bilingual therapists and have a group of women who I hang out with. We see each other, you know, every month or so. And we just get together, and they're, I would say, stronger, wiser others for me, are just incredible women. I learned so much from them. Just being in their presence, I always leave feeling whole. I always leave feeling like I learned something, even when that's not the goal. I'm not there to learn. I'm there to be with. And yet I leave feeling, oh my God. So I'm intentional about the groups I hold on to and I don't want to let go and don't let go of. Again, I feel like part of that is because I left home. I left so far. I moved so far away from home. Finding those spaces helps me feel motivated, helps me feel like I belong, right? And helps me continue doing what I'm doing.
The stronger, wiser other, I need to have those people around me. It's the same with the Monica and Anna that you had, and you kind of trying to find similar things here. Is it hard to navigate that in the therapy world, like going to trainings, going to different spaces? We often don't have that, because that's something I'm still struggling with. Like, how do you navigate that? How do you hold on to yourself? Because you're speaking to something that's so important of like, you need that outside world also to mirror the who I am culturally, fully myself is valid. And we don't often see that in trainings.
I think before, I used to just get excited about learning and would just be like, yeah, let's do it. Now it's an investment. If I'm going to pay somebody to help me expand my knowledge, skills, and abilities, then I'm going to do it with people who are trusted. I now literally will reach out to folks who have gone through similar trainings that I want to explore. And I ask, who trained? Who was it? What did you think of them? How did they speak about people? How did they speak about identities? Because I'm tired of the old script of, how do you have words? What word would you put to that? I'm just, yeah.
Just code shifting. That's what I think I'm learning from you even just saying this, because that's a dilemma I come up with. And I've been so used to a lot of people of color just, we'll go in, we'll take what we need, and we're not going to be seen, and then we'll kind of shift it around in our heads. I can see the exhaustion in your face. I've felt that over and over again. I'm like, no, I'm paying for this. Why can't I have a space that is actually allowing me to show up as my full self? I deserve that too.
I found that last year, last spring, I helped out at an EFT externship. I found this experience where for the first time, I even made a comment to the trainers. I was there as a helper. There is something to holding some little power when I go to these spaces now, because I'm a faculty member. And so a lot of my students who are interested in EFT, and they learn about it from me because, you know, they need to have this knowledge, right? I experienced this last year where I felt seen, I felt like I belonged at a training of all places, which has never happened before. But it took intention. And the trainers were so intentional about creating the space. Trainers, trainings, most folks pay for the content. Most folks can get by with just getting what they need and going. But there's something about the model of emotionally focused therapy where there has to be intention, because the spaces that you're taking us into are vulnerable. The spaces that you're having us explore are vulnerable.
There is a difference there because it's so experiential. You can't not have your full self there.
You can't. Because then you don't leave with the goods. You leave with a cognitive map of here's what we do in EFT, but it's the experiential component of here's what it feels like to do EFT. That changes everything. The externship itself, you know, the way they have it set up, we're thrown into practicing. We're thrown into the experiential piece of watching videos, of seeing live sessions, of deconstructing what we believed relationship work was and building on here's what it looks like from an attachment lens. Such a profound way. Trainings like those, it's important to think about who's in your space, who's attending, because when we can't show up as our full selves, we are not going to get the same thing out of it that someone else will with who holds a lot of privilege in our society. So I assisted at this externship. I'm a faculty member, so I had students attend as well. And I'm so grateful that they did, because the uniqueness of the combination of the two trainers, Drs. Robert Allen and Paul Guillory, a force coming together. And the way that they created the space, the way that they just, you know, Robert brings in an emphasis and a understanding of what it means to hold multiple identities, what it means to show up with multiple identities, what it means to learn with as a fully embodied human, right? And so I felt seen as a gay man. I felt seen as a brown man, just all in one, all at once. And I wasn't even there to learn EFT. I knew it. But as someone who was just helping, it was just so profound. I mean, I remember making a comment during the training to both of them at the end upon reflection about our time together. Just so grateful, because I don't know if I'm going to have that experience again.
I hate that. It's rare. But I love seeing just even the excitement in your face and your whole body. When you're like, I feel seen as a gay man. I feel seen as a brown man. It's just your whole self just comes out.
It was lovely.
I love that you got that in that space and that you were intentional about it.
It is so rare. That makes me ask questions, more questions than I ever have before.
You know, you're really helping me with this dialogue right now, because I've been asking myself, why is it harder for me to do it in the EFT space? You know, because in other trainings, I've been doing this forever. Like, okay, I'll get the knowledge, readjust, do it for how I need to do me. But you are asked to be your whole self. It's so experiential. We're practicing. We're being us throughout the training. So shoving part of us down takes a lot of energy. And you can't, and then you can't learn properly. And you can't really do this model unless you're allowed to fully be. So, and the fact that you fought to figure out that there's spaces like that that exist, I'd like you sharing that too. That kind of gives me some motivation. I just got to give up. I can find that as well. That's so needed. And that was very needed for me right now. So I am so grateful for this conversation.
The things that have come up for me, I can't even describe it. So, but yeah, that's changed. I think being able to really understand, because I teach students how to do this, right? How to be counselors. And I've learned over the years, this white-centric model of therapy, it's cute, but it's not everything. There's so much more we can do, provide in ways that we don't think we can, because, that's not how it's done, or that we don't do that in counseling. It's like, actually, we do, and we can. And how are you to know? You've never served my community, the community I serve. It's weird. It's a weird wrestling of internal wrestling of freedom with also what's okay, what's not okay type of dialogue. It's been beautiful to see, because I've been doing therapy for 10 years. It's been beautiful to see just the last month of how therapy has looked compared to a few years ago, compared to last year. I think the more embodied I have become, the more grounded I have been as a clinician, the more focused I've been as a clinician, and the more unapologetic I've been as a clinician. I've never been direct in the therapeutic sense. I am such a direct person now, but I do it in an embodied way that is from compassion, that is from understanding, that is from care. That has changed how I do work.
Because that's who you are as a person. And so when you're holding back those opinions, you're actually not doing them a disservice, right? Oh, I'm going to just sit here and be that model of what you think a therapist has to just be soft and constantly validating. So it's like layers and layers where you just found yourself deeper and deeper and deeper. And you're seeing it. You're seeing the difference in your students and your clients.
And within myself and relationships, it has been something that I've continued to figure out how to carry out in other spaces. Because to be anything else than myself is not acceptable anymore. I'm about to be 35. No more.
To be anything other than myself is not acceptable anymore. That's your guiding star. I think that's just the most wonderful takeaway from today. And another piece that I'm taking, because I'm on that journey as well, but it's how intentional you've been around your environment. Because you can do a lot of, I'm going to hold on to me and it's not, I have to always be myself. But when you don't have those mirrors around you, you get lost. You need community. You need connection as well. You can't just be as centered as you are in yourself and then be in environments where you're not seen and appreciated and accepted.
You're helping me take away things too. Just the dialogue has, I'm sharing all this and then as I share it, I'm hearing myself and just the continued need to hold true to you, to myself, to us as people. And I think the gratefulness is I need to communicate that more when it comes up, like to the people that matter that have helped my journey. They need to know their role.
I mean, I think you're one for me today. So I do appreciate, you know, and you don't even know the context I'm living in, but the universe has kind of brought this, some of the stuff you said to me today to me. It came at the perfect time. I appreciate you. Any other takeaways you want to touch on? And also just maybe mention where people can find you.
So I have a private practice. It's called Vanda Counseling Collaborative. It is a virtual/in-person now practice. I'm just brought on 2 supervisees as independent contractors. So more to come, but you can go to vandacounseling.org to learn more. I serve clients in Colorado and in Texas in Spanish, in English, and American Sign Language, and doing relationship work, family work, individual work, now with the office play therapy. I have some deaf clients, and I'm interim president of, it's called DOVE, Deaf Overcoming Violence Through Empowerment. It's a nonprofit for the state of Colorado that supports survivors of intimate partner violence and sexual assault. So I serve on the board of directors, and it was part of my goal of trying to plug into the community in a different way outside of direct service to more organizational support. And it's been really lovely to connect in a different way.
Wonderful. Oh, I love how you're still holding on to all the pieces. Look at you being your whole self all the time. That's beautiful. Okay. And we'll put all that in the show notes of that organization. Thank you so much. I hope we don't go another years without talking to each other.
Please, let's not.
Join the movement and keep the conversation going at deconstructingtherapy.com. And follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at Deconstructing Therapy. If you found value in today's episode, please subscribe and rate us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. If you are able to and would like to help sustain the podcast, you can find us at buymeacoffee.com/deconstructingtherapy to show your support. Thank you for listening.